Good evening, everyone. This is DT Rector, and we are starting the Love Unleashed radio show. It's happening every Sunday, everyone. Sunday from 6 p.m. until about 6:30, 7 o'clock, depending on the nature and the talk of the conversation. But, you know, tonight my heart is heavy because over this past week, we've had some very sad occasions to take place, sad events to take place. There's some things going on in this country. There are things that's going on in this world that are just disheartening. And because of that, it requires us to have a very serious conversation, conversations as mothers, conversations as women, conversations as professionals, but conversations as good Christians that we need to be able to show love on this earth. And unfortunately, right now, the way that the world is emulating hatred instead of practicing love. And so today, I wanted to just make sure that we had a conversation. I have two sons, two that are older. One is 23 and one is 20. I have two grandchildren. They're male, and one is one, about to be two, and the other one's about to be one. I have godchildren. I have brothers. I have uncles. And because of this, you know, even having nephews and even having men in my life that I love and respect, I care about their lives. And because I care about their lives, I cannot remain silent and just allow things to just happen in this world and just not be in a position to invoke change. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk. We're going to have some real talk. We're going to talk about ways that we as women can help to rebuild our men, ways that we can help to teach our children how to be better citizens, and even talk about that elephant in the room about racism and that elephant in the room. We talk about police brutality, that elephant in the room where even when we provide this black-on-black crime and we in our communities, we tear our own communities down and not support one another, we don't buy from each other, but we're willing to go out and support someone else, the same someone else that may be the ones that turn their backs on us. So tonight, y'all, we're gonna have some real talk conversation. I do have some people lined up to join us on the call. We have some mothers, some real mothers, but they're professional women, and they have something to say. They want to be able to make change as well. Also, ladies and gentlemen, I definitely have scheduled a beautiful woman, a beautiful woman of God, a beautiful woman who's willing to make change. She's doing things in the community, and we're going to talk with her. And I'm not going to shortchange her because, honestly, before these events took place, I asked her to join us on this call because she has some real good stuff that she's doing, and I know her heart. You know, I've spent some time with this woman, and I know that she has a heart to serve, and so we're going to be able to talk with her shortly. But I wanted to, before I bring her on the call, I wanted to just read this poem to everyone, and I really want you to let this resonate because this is where we are as a people. And yes, I'm an African-American woman, but I am an American citizen. And because I'm an American citizen, my children are American citizens, we have the right. We have the right to survive. We have the right to live, and no one has the right to take our lives. And so the poem is Still I Rise, and this is by Dr. Maya Angelou. And as you guys know, I love her. I love her poems. But it's not just because I love her poems and how eloquent the poems are and how much they resonate in my spirit, but I love this woman's story. Although she is deceased, this woman has had to rise up from some bad times. And so I'm going to go ahead and share with you this poem, Still I Rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise. Does my sadness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room? Just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hope springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries? Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, because I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swelling, leaving behind nights of terror and fear. I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gift that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise. Ladies and gentlemen, we as people, we have to continue to understand that no matter what people do, no matter what society says, no matter what they are trying to get us to conform to, we will always rise. We will always rise above because we were built to last. And so, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my guest of the moment. Her name is Sister Roberta Spate. Let me share something about her just briefly, and then I'll have her tell her story and tell what she's about. But Roberta E. Spate is affectionately known as Miss Burt. She's a speaker, an author, a trainer, and internet radio host. Has spoken at conferences, workshops, and women's retreats throughout the U.S. She is compelling, humorous, who has a passion for supporting women in their personal professional development. Her published work includes open heart forums, inspirational quotes and writings, and Are You Ready for Management, a book created that is geared to the fundamentals of management and leadership. Ms. Roberta was a member of the International Toastmasters, which she has won regional awards for her speeches. Now, I can read more and more, but I want to go ahead and what better way is to have Ms. Roberta come on the line, and she can go ahead and tell us more about herself. Are you there?
Yes, I am, and thank you so much for having me, Minister Rector. I am just so excited to be here this evening.
Awesome. I'm just grateful that you took the time out of your schedule to be a part of this. And I know when we initially came together and I reached out, the radio show was going to take a different direction. And because in light of all that has taken place, I decided to change the tone of the topic of the evening. And again, although you were gracious and you were like, hey, sure, no problem, we're going to jump right in, I still want to just publicly apologize, you know, for changing at the last minute. But tonight we're going to talk about the right to live, a mother's call for justice. And so in light of what has happened around the United States of America with citizens' rights being violated by individuals who are sworn to protect and serve the community, I wanted this show to just be dedicated to mothers who have lost their children, especially their sons, to violence, and calling to the mothers who have lost their children. So welcome, welcome, welcome. And I'm going to give you a few minutes to just share some things about yourself, and, you know, and I'll ask a couple of questions, and then we're going to get into a conversation. I do have a couple of other people that I invited to join in on our conversation because I wanted this to be rich and healthy. And if they join us, you know, great. If not, we're going to keep it moving. I think that you and I can definitely have a very healthy conversation. So I'm going to be quiet for a little bit and give you the mic. Pass that mic and rock your face.
Sure. Well, I mean, basically, I just have, you know, this calling on my life, and I knew it at a very young age, but because I did not have the people that was grounded that could help me get to my goal, it took me a little longer to get there, where a lot now we have a lot of young people finding their way or knowing their purpose in life. And I didn't know that. I didn't know my purpose. I didn't know what I was called to do. But I knew heavy on my heart that I was called to do something great. What it was and how to get there, I did not know. So a lot of opportunities came through my lifetime that I missed because I did not know who I was and whose I was. So therefore, I missed those opportunities. However, God had other things planned for me, and I began to take what I had been through, my trials and tribulations, and be under a wing of a beautiful woman. Her name is Miss Mary Cross, who was very instrumental in my life as a young girl, just telling her journey. And so I will always reflect if this woman, you know, young woman that had, you know, four kids and went to school, took them with her, put them on the floor while she was in class and go get her degree and then turn around and get her graduate's degree, then why can't I? So I use her story as my strength to go through and push through a lot of my adversities in life, no matter what it was. And now I've called myself the dream pusher. And what I do is I help women who are ready to rebirth their dreams, because it's never too late, who rebirth their dreams, who've been, you know, put on a shelf, who has decided to raise their family or whatever they've decided to do besides live their dream and just put it on hold. So I helped them to dust off those dreams and give them the support, give them a strategic plan of action, give them clarity and direction and momentum, and help them to develop their dreams, because their dreams are important. Someone out there is waiting to hear what they have to say, read what they have to say. They need them. No matter what the situation has been, it's never too late. And I'm here to say it is never too late. And I used to regret everything that I went, oh, I shouldn't have married when I was 18. I shouldn't have had kids. You know, he's gone on with his life. He's got remarried. I'm never going to get remarried. I mean, I regretted every single thing. And once I realized I need to stop the regretting, because those regrets were holding me back for what God had for me. And once I realized that, it was no stopping me. It was no stopping me. And I had one of my uncles, he passed away. He was actually, they had a singing group, Doug. And he came to me one day and he said, "You have a mighty calling on your life." He was like, don't stop here. Because I got up and spoke at my cousin's funeral. He's like, "You have a mighty calling on your life." He said, "You need to put away your fears. You need to put away your regrets and walk into the calling." And, I mean, I, like, cried. I just, like, literally cried. And I just started to believe. I had to change my mindset and believe. And so I've changed my life by just changing my mindset and believing in myself and believing what God has for me is for me, and started walking the journey. And I've had a nonprofit for women, for single moms, that I have started and been instrument in a lot of change for them. And it also changed me as a person. So here I am in 2016, still pushing, still, you know, helping people change their mindset, change their life, change their thinking.
Well, you know what? Kudos to you. I can definitely, I can relate to you, especially with you saying that, you know, at some point you have regrets, but then there's a time in your life that you get to that place and you're like, okay, but that can't be your excuse any longer. You know, that thing cannot be the thing that holds you back from accomplishing the things in which God has called you into. And, you know, everybody always has that one person that is able to see, you know, the greatness in you before you are willing, because we know it's there, but before we're willing to accept it and run with it. And, you know, that's very touching for you to honor the two people. You honored Miss Mary Croft, and then you had an uncle. You said his name was Doug, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's,
yes,
always, it's always good to have those people in our lives. And it's just a blessing. And it's right on time. You had some of the things that you mentioned were they just hit home. You said you had to put away your fears and you had to put away your regrets. And even in this time of our lives, and I know you're considered the dream pusher, tell me, you know, with everything that's going on just recently, not even last week, but, you know, not even 2 weeks ago, but just recently, this past week, you know, as the dream pusher, what message would you want to give to those who are listening, those who will be listening to this, and for those whose lives have been impacted, not just indirectly, but directly from some type of violence or some type of loss or something that has been taken away, a change in their lives? What would you offer them right now?
So I like to use my personal life as an example. You know, I have three sons. And my youngest son, I have instilled in all my sons, all my kids actually, to understand who they are, their value, and whose they are. And whatever they feel that they are called to do, to work hard and stay focused. Yes, that trials and tribulations are going to come. And that's all part of building you as a person to prepare you to be propelled to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've always instilled in my sons and my daughter greatness. You are great. You are the best. There's nobody better than you. Work hard. I've always instilled that in them because as a former athlete, that's what I had to get ready for me. That's why I still have record still up at TC Williams, because my mindset was, I'm the best. There's nobody better than me that's going to touch this track. And so I instilled those things in my son. So my youngest son, a lot of people who don't know him think he's cocky or arrogant, but he's very confident in himself because he know who he is. He know he has a dream. A lot of times now what's going on is there are people out here who are throwing water on these young boys' dreams. They're not giving them the support that they need to be able to dream. So when you have a society doesn't have any dreams, doesn't have any hopes, they don't care about anything. They don't care about the next day. They don't care if they wake up tomorrow. There's no respect. So when one doesn't have a goal or a dream to strive for, what is there left? So right now, you see the black-on-black killings. There's no hope. They have no hope. My son was robbed at gunpoint, set up by one of his teammates. There's no hope. They're not going to college after high school. They have no dreams. They have no aspirations. So it wouldn't mean anything if they had pulled the trigger and killed my son. Because they don't have anything to lose. What are they going to lose? Right? So, but then there's people that, you know, oh, he's too cocky. He, you know, he needs to tone it down. He's too flashy. You know, why he smiles so much? Why he laughs so much? What? You'd rather for him to have an attitude and be hard to work with. I'm not understanding. So, you know, I tell my son, keep your eyes on your goal. Don't let nobody tell you what you cannot have. As long as you're working hard, know that God is first, you know, respect your parents and work hard. There's nothing that you cannot achieve. Don't listen to the outside. And right now we have a lot of, it's sad, we have a lot of people, we have them in the schools. I've had teachers and bus drivers tell my son, you're not going to amount to anything. You're going to be in jail. You're going to be dead. And he was like in the seventh grade. Who tells a person in the seventh grade that? But when you start planting those seeds in kids like they do today, they have no hope. They have no dreams. Yeah. And we throw the water on their dreams before they even begin to manifest.
So let me ask you a question.
I
was going to ask you a question because you said something that was, I think, is very important, especially in this day and time with our youth. It's not just our youth that's under attack, but, you know, they do grow up into manhood. And so, of course, you have your youth that, as you mentioned, they have no hope. And so if they have no hope and nothing to lose, and then they become young men, and it's the same mentality, but it's more practiced and it's more embedded. But what can we do as parents? What do you think we can do as parents, as a community, to even change the dynamics of this? Because I'm just of the believer that there's something that has to be done now. There are so many, I was watching TV and I saw so many critics, you know, everybody wants to blame somebody, but I don't see a lot of people out there in the community making a change until someone's life is taken, you know, and not just talking about what the police has done. But because we're on this path that you're talking about the black-on-black crime, what can we do as a community? You know, once we get out of the hood, per se, and I'm saying quote-unquote because my hood could be different from your hood, but once we come out of that, a lot of people don't go back. A lot of people don't return back. So I would love to know your thoughts about that.
Exactly. So, you know, I was born and raised in the projects, and Alexandria is very dear to my heart. And a lot of us have left Alexandria but still go back to our community. We still go, there's still mentor programs that some of us have started, organizations that are trying to, you know, help the youth. And, you know, really it has to start at home. We have to get back to our basics. We have to start taking time out with our kids, getting them to say yes, ma'am, no, sir, having structure, taking them to church, understanding who they are. And that's where a lot of times, you know, it's has changed. It's not, you don't see that as often. You know, it used to be, I know, about 50, 60 kids in the youth choir when we was coming up. You know, I had my kids in the youth choir. You know, we don't see that unity where, you know, right now if I go and correct somebody's child, either the child gonna cuss me out or the parent gonna cuss me out. One of the two. And that's where we have failed our children in giving them the basic of life, which is teaching them who they are. They're God's children. Mm-hmm. They have value and they have purpose. And when you don't have anybody in the house, when grandma is 35 years old and she's still trying to find her way, then we're going to have some issues. Because grandma who's 35 is not the same as when we had grandmas in their 60s who had wisdom, who set you down, who talked to you, you know, and we respect them. Now, I'm 50 years old, and I'm sitting on a train, and kids, that's my son, age 6, 17, 16 year old, you know, even younger, cussing, MF that, blankety bank that. I'm like, do you not see all this gray hair? Do you not see me sitting here? And I would look at them, and one time I said something, and the girl looked at me like, I dare you. You talking to me? Like, kind of thing. But what we need to do is, you know, we have to start getting back to the basics and training our children up to respect others and respect hard work, taking them to work to see how hard it is for us to bring home and put a roof over their head and food on the table. Understand what's important. You want $200 pair of shoes, but we don't have anything in the refrigerator, or our lights about to get cut out. Society is right now. We're sending the wrong message. We're sending the wrong message, and we really need to get back to the basics of training our children up correctly and bringing that village back because you know. Nowadays, you know, your neighbor can't even say anything to your child. You know, people, I welcome. You see my son doing something, you know, pull him up and call, you know, call his dad, call me. So he won't hear it on both ends. But now we can't do that. And we're dividing our own self and we're hurting our own self when it comes to that. Because as a parent, I can't be every place all the time. And I pray that what I've instilled in my child, that when he goes out, he's representing his mom, his dad, and his mom. But we all know we've been kids. We've done things we weren't supposed to. You know what I'm saying? But if a neighbor saw it, they pull you up. But now neighbors don't want to get involved because they're afraid, you know, of getting cursed out or, you know, somebody pulling a gun out on them or. And it shouldn't be that way. As a community, we should be embracing and helping one another to better, you know, to better each and every one of us prepare our children to be able to go on the outside world.
So,
but I don't think we've done a good job on that.
And you know, I agree with you on that. And please forgive me that I interrupted you as you were finishing that last thought. I wanted to go back to what you said about the fear, you know, that our neighbors are fearful. You know, that village that you would usually be relying on is now afraid of being able to just stand up and be that hero, that example. They're afraid. And, you know, I was taught, and what I've learned through my life is that you teach people how to treat you. So if we as a community are fearful of one another, when we go out into and we have other communities looking in, other races looking in, and if we're fearful of one another, don't you think that would cause them to be fearful of us as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. If we are here killing one another, if we don't value our own, they're not going to value us. Mm-hmm. If they're killing themselves, hey, why not? I can kill them too.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of them too. So I mean, you're right. We're absolutely demonstrating that fear, that condition of they don't value their lives. Why should I value their lives? I don't, You know, why should I care?
Yeah.
We're showing,
now,
we're, you know, that's how I see it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but you know what? Your opinion, you have an opinion that probably represents a lot of Americans in this country. But I definitely, I want change to take place. Although that, yes, we both agree that we teach people how to treat us. And we haven't done a great job in this last couple of decades as to expressing how we should be treated. You know, years ago, our forefathers, our ancestors, they worked really, really hard. They were abused and battered and mistreated, and they were just downright treated poorly. But they still fought, and they fought hard to get us to a place where we're able to even own things. We're even able to have bank accounts and be able to walk into a public place in the same as a Caucasian person, to be able to sit and ride a bus. And, you know, the people actually struggled to get us to this place. Where I'm going with this, because I want to transition this conversation to education, you know, how the lack of education in our children, because we're now in this technology stage where it's so much easier to just get information that you don't have to read. And our ancestors, they fought hard for us to learn how to read. That was one of the things that they knew. And if they knew how to read, that they would, that would open the door for them to be able to become businessmen, to be able to pull their children, their family out of poverty, to be able to be respected in a community. We've basically taken those free liberties and just basically thrown those out of the window. So I want to hear your thoughts about literacy and just how you think that we as a community can get back to educating our children, educating other families, educating other women as the dream pusher. How can we push the dream of education in families?
So I'm very, very big on education because I tell people what you learn better your life, no one else can take it away from you. No one else can dispute what you have learned, period. No one can tell you to learn that. No one can say, no, that's not true. With the fact that you have studied and you have shown yourself approved that you have learned this. No one said you didn't earn that degree. When you sat there at that computer and you know that you stayed up to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning typing papers and giving lectures in class and research, no one can say that you did not do those things when, in fact, that you know that you know that you have put in the work. And once it's inside your brain, you know it. No one can cut open your brain and take it out and erase everything you learn. Okay? So I do believe that education is very important. However you get it, if it's a 4-year institute, a 2-year institute, if it's an online webinar class, if it's a 30 minute phone call about, you know, educating yourself on diabetes, what have you. If you sit in a class for a day, or if you sit in a class for 3 hours, you're educating yourself. Now, what I do have a problem is saying, oh, I don't like to read, or I don't read. You talking about a person that would hit the roof, that would be me. Simple fact, because you have to read and understand it to communicate to somebody. So I was at I won't say where I was at, but I was selling my books. And the person, you know, picked up the book and, you know, they flipped through the pages and they put the book down. And they start asking me questions. And so I, you know, reciting some of the poems or the writings of wisdom that I had in the book. Or then they were like, oh, okay, that's really nice. That's in the book. I was like, yeah. They turned around and said, well, I don't read. If you could have seen my face, I was like, okay. So, you know, now, you know, we have CDs and, like I said, webinars and things of that nature to get the, you know, information out to people several ways now instead of reading. But reading is something I encourage people to do. It helps with vocabulary. You know, it stimulates the mind. So I'm very big on education. And with the hopes that, you know, with boys, like my oldest son, I was really scared. I was like, I don't think this boy can read, kind of thing, because I never saw him. I used to take him all to the library. And then, you know, as he got older, whatever, you know, played sports and stuff like that. So I'm like, boy, can you read? You know, just out of the blue. Yeah. I haven't seen you with no book. You know, I see you go to school with your book. You do, you know, but I can you read? So he wasn't reading to my satisfaction. So I started getting books that were interested him. As well as my youngest one, I started getting books that was, you know, interested to him, Captain Underpants and stuff like that, you know, coming up and stuff like that to keep him engaged in reading. So, you know, because, like you said, our ancestors were really hard to get those rights. And I'm a person that I will not sit in the back of the bus. Ever since I was young, I would never, you know how the kids would get on school bus and they go sit in the back? I would like, no. My mom and my uncle and them, they got spit on, stuff thrown at them, you know, can't eat at a counter, can't sit, no, I'm sitting right here in the front, and I would always sit in the front of the bus. That was my mindset. And then my kids, I would never, no, you're not sitting in the back of the bus. I said, your grandma and your uncles work too hard for us to just sit in the back. You don't sit in the front. You know, so and that's another thing. We need to educate our children on the past. Just because, I mean, that, you know, I was born in 66, you know, and my mom and them was still marching in 66. And So it's things like that they need to hear. They need to hear these things. And I remember, you know, my mom sitting there telling me stories about, you know, trying to go to the lunch counter and the girl wouldn't wait on her and, you know, the whole scenario, marching through the streets of Alexandria. I mean, everything. And our kids still need to hear that. You know, they still need to hear that people's lives paved the way for them to walk down the street with their pants hanging off their tail.
Yeah.
You know, people paid their lives for us to live in neighborhoods where we couldn't live before, for us to go to schools where we couldn't go to schools. People pay their lives for that.
Yeah.
And we out here killing ourselves now.
Yeah. And so, you know, with that being said, I know that even our conversation, our dialogue may not fix the problem, but I'm hoping that for those who will listen and are listening in online, that they really stop and think about, you know, what they can do as individuals to help change the culture, help change the trajectory of the lives of And it's not just black men, it's black women. But unfortunately, you know, our black men are the ones, our black males are the ones that are suffering. My pastor this morning, he preached a wonderful, wonderful message, as I'm sure that other pastors and bishops are preaching a word, a right now word, to their congregations about racism and about being and not being silent and about making a change in this world. And so with that being said, because our show is based upon love and the theme of the show is unleashing love into the world, you know, I certainly don't want to always talk about the negative and the violence that actually is in our communities, but I want to talk about love and how we can show kindness to our brothers and sisters, even in the midst of what's happening. And so I know you said you grew up in Virginia, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so I grew up in the District of Columbia, and in my community, it didn't have Caucasian people. So basically the only Caucasian people that I came across when I was coming up were the ones that I came in contact with at the grocery store, maybe at a mall, or you know, those were the only times as a child that I even connected with someone other than my own race. So I wasn't prepared for those relationships. So and my final question to you before I give you the opportunity to tell us special upcoming events that you may be having and even how people can connect with you as we wrap up the call. But my final question to you is how do we as a community come together? What are your thoughts? What's your wisdom behind how we can teach our children that a white person or a Caucasian person is no different than an African American or black boy? You know, it depends, and that's why I'm using different terminology, because I want people to truly grasp the concept that it doesn't matter if I call them white or Caucasian, but if I call someone black or African American, at the end of the day, we're still Americans. And we're still people. So how do you think that we can come together? Because we have a lot of hatred in the world. So can you just leave us with some wisdom about love and about respect and how we as a community can move forward after all of what has transpired this week?
You know, we always have a division. You look at areas, you got the suburb, you got the urban, you know, everything has always been divided. And what I would like to see is white churches and black churches, community leaders in the churches, black and white, work together and bring more harmony in the community. You know, we got the black churches doing the black thing for the black community. We got the, you know, white churches over there doing, they'll do a little outreach, but, you know, not too far into the, you know, the area that's, you know, a little past their comfort zone. So I would like to see the leaders of pastors that leads these, you know, white churches, white Baptist churches, white Pentecostal churches, white Methodist churches, come together with other black churches in the area and work together. There are so many churches on every corner. I'm not understanding why the community needs are not met. Why that, you know, why we still have elderly that still can't get to their doctor's appointments, or still don't have food, or still can't get their medication. But yet we got 20 churches just about on every corner in a community. Something's not working. That's a whole different topic, but I would like to see our churches working together, brothers and sisters coming together, going in, you know, all the communities together, hand in hand, showing unity. When they display unity and love together, you know, love is contagious. So when they, you know, if they can see a black minister and a white minister coming into a black community or coming together in a white community, doing things together, they see hope that they can bridge the two social, economic people together. So, you know, I truly believe that when we show love to one another and get out of our comfort zone, get out of those four walls, that's where ministry starts, beyond those four walls that people preach in pulpit. And I'm on the ground ministry. That's who I am. My ministry is not in the church. My ministry is out there. My ministry is reaching those broken individuals who are feeling hopeless. That's my ministry. You know, and getting those people into church. So that's what I would like to see. And as individuals, as parents, what I would recommend is that we, you know, take time out and talk to our children about what's going on and, you know, show them. Are you there?
I'm here. Oh, no, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you just kind of like went out all of a sudden, and I didn't know if you were still there. But to be that mentor, to be that person that they see that shows the respect and shows love and shows attention, but it starts at home. If I'm cussing my kids out, then that's not showing them love. So I gotta turn it around and show them what love is. And think we'll begin to heal as a community, you know, with love. You know, everything is done in love, and with an open heart, without an agenda. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Just don't have
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Ms. Dream Pusher, why don't you share with us? I would love to, you know, we definitely have a lot more to talk about, and so hopefully and prayerfully I can have you back on. But I wanted to still at least carve out some time to just for you to share any upcoming events that you have, and, you know, if there are any books or any other things that you have going on, give you the opportunity to share with us about that, and then especially how if someone wants to contact you, how they're able to do so.
So, yeah, some of the upcoming events I got are I'm actually having a Stop the Violence call actually with a couple of panelists on the No Turning Back radio show Wednesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can join us there on Blog Talk Radio as well. I will have a couple of panelists, Councilman John Chapman, activist Larry Bryant Jr., Mark Durant, who is CEO of Jersey and Things, and we have professor and author James Williams, who wrote the book Thugs to, was it Thugs? I forgot the name of his book. I'm sorry. But Thugs the Scholar is the name of his book. And we're going to, you know, just keep dialoguing and try to come up with at least a couple of action plans to go out in our community and do. So that's Wednesday the 13th at 8 o'clock p.m. And then I have on August the 6th, I will be speaking at the domestic fight against domestic violence, as well you will be the MC there. And that's August the 6th. And you can go on mylifelinecosmetics.com to get information and tickets for that event. Let me see, that's September the 17th. My company, State Speaks to Inspire, And my nonprofit, Black Roots of Alexandria, is having a Black Authors event. So we're definitely looking for authors in the DMV area. We've got people coming from New Jersey as well, Baltimore, to be a vendor, an author there. We're also looking for non-authors as well, but those spaces are limited and filling up quickly. So we welcome any authors that would like to participate in this. It's $45, and you will get a host of things. You can go on my site at spacespeaks.com, and all the information is there that you will receive as a author. Let me see, that's the September. I think that's it for now. I think that's it. But you can always contact me. Look on my, contact me at spacespeaks@gmail.com. You can visit my website, spacespeaks.com, as well. That has pretty much all of my events that's coming up. If you would like to contact me on Facebook, you can look under my name, Roberta E. Elliott Speight. That's S-P-E-I-G-H-T. I'm on Twitter as Speight Speaks to Inspire. I guess that's it, right? Facebook, Twitter, I can't keep up with them all, but social media, it's kind of hard to, you know, all the different social media, I don't know, but I'm mostly on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, and you can always find me under my name, Roberta Elliott Speight. So definitely, you know, come out and support the Black Authors Expo. For those who are in book clubs, it's perfect time to meet, you know, lots of authors. They're going to be, you know, book signing. They're going to be speaking about their book, talking about their book. They get 10 minutes on stage time to talk about their book. They get a free professional headshot done. So definitely come out. You know, if you have a group of a book club, you definitely need to come out and check out some of these great authors in the DMV area.
Well, it definitely sounds like you have some things going on, and not, these are not things that are just going to benefit your brand, but it's definitely something that's going to be beneficial to the community. And so I just applaud you for just continuing to push the dreams of those who you are purpose to. I thank you for joining the Love Unleashed show. I hope that we were good guests, and we were good hosts to you as you were being a guest to us. And so we're going to go ahead and go do our final wrap-up. We are actually ending this call, this on-air session. We got about 5 minutes left on air. It's amazing when you're talking about some good conversation how time flies. So, Sister Roberta, I thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. I am just so super excited about what's to come for you and all the great things that God holds for you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I will take that in, and you got me blushing over here. All right. Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Have a great week, everyone.
You too. God bless you. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the one and only Roberta Speight. So we had a wonderful, lively conversation. We talked about several issues that are just concerning our community. One of the things that I wanted to, in a wrap-up this evening, was to just talk to you about some of the things that we discussed over the call with her. And being in a position of a servant, being in a position of just being in the community, one of the things that was spoken about was that the people have lost hope, that the people have lost the ability to be able to fight. And so I believe that God is calling us into a fight. As I was sitting in the actual worship services today, and our pastor preached a phenomenal word, as I mentioned, and he preached from Leviticus 26:9-13. You should read that. But one of the things that God was speaking to me about while he was preaching is that, you know, he mentioned, if we go back to the book of Exodus, it talks about how Moses parted the sea and, you know, how the Israelites were being called out of slavery from Pharaoh and from the Egyptians. And so, you know, it made me think about us as a people. And when I say us, I'm speaking about African-American people. And this is not to create any dissension, but I'm speaking directly to African-Americans right now because I need for us to understand that God has truly called us out of slavery. He called us out of slavery. It's like he called out the Israelites. But sometimes we don't get the message. Sometimes we don't get the memo, or we're not paying attention long enough to be able to hear what God is saying. And so what the Lord had shown me today was that the sea is waiting to be parted, but you must have the appointed and have that one that is appointed and is called to lift up his or her hands to be able to part the sea so that people can move forward. And so this is my call to that individual that God has called you to speak out on behalf of the community. God has called you as an individual to teach. God has called you to preach. God has called you to sing. God has called you to write. God has called you to do something. But if you are sitting back and you're one of those individuals who is just waiting to see what someone else is going to do, please understand that, and this is the word that the Lord had dropped and provided me today to share today on this show, is that if you are that one that's sitting back waiting and watching to see what's going to be next, he's saying, no, I'm waiting on you to lift up your hands, to lift up your hands so that you can part that sea. Just do what it is that God has called you to do, and I guarantee you, you will be in a better position. You know, in Exodus 14:15-16, in the verse 15 it says, tell the people to get moving. And when I saw that, as I'm sitting in worship service and I saw that, it said, tell the people to get moving. And this is the New Living Translation. And so that is my final word to the people tonight, that the Lord is saying, get moving. He said, tell the people to get moving. He says, why are you just praying to me? You can't just pray to me and not get moving. That it requires an action. And so although God is hearing our calls and our pleas and our cries, he has also called us into action. And faith without works is dead. So now it is time for the people to rise up and show themselves in action. Show your faith. Show that you believe in this thing we call love. Show that you believe in this 1 Corinthians 13:4-8, where it says, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easy anger. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. So here's what I would like to leave with you tonight, that if you are walking in hatred, you have already failed. The enemy has already won. But if you can put on love and you can walk out and share love with other people, no matter what their race is, then you have definitely elevated yourself to another level. You have absolutely done what God has called you to do, to get moving. So tonight I encourage you to go ahead and get moving. Love, and love unconditionally. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DT Rector, and this is the Love Unleashed Show. Reach out to us at www.loveunleashed.com.